the crib. It was the worst of times. Well, if not the absolute worst of times, it was definitely in my top five. Things were tough enough that I ranked them right up there with earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. Not that I'd ever lived through a lava slide or quake, but I was pretty sure the earth was actually moving beneath my feet. On the other hand, it could have been considered the best of times. That was because I had a brand new baby boy in my arms. He was beautiful, even if my mother did say he looked like Frank Sinatra. I'm sure Frank was a popular guy in his time, but I wasn't sure I appreciated the comparison. I thought a better one might be Arnold Schwarzenegger in diapers. After all, he was a hefty 9 pounds, 13 ounces at birth. I don't think Frank could claim anything even close to that. My brother later nicknamed him Moose, thus proving my point. My son had recently been encouraged to enter the world with the help of two hefty nurses pushing in tandem on my belly. Apparently, nature wasn't powerful enough to do the job on her own. To be fair, I had chosen an epidural for the event, which seemed to be affecting my ability to provide the needed assistance with adequate conviction. We hadn't anticipated that Josh, at close to 10 pounds, would need some extra help in order to make his grand entrance on stage. So the nurses, ever helpful and inventive, gave him a loving shove and delivered him safely into my arms. I was entranced by him. I loved my new son in the same way I had loved my daughter upon her arrival, with an intensity I could only have imagined in my pre-mothering days. From some hidden place inside, God opened a pathway directly from my heart to my baby's hearts. It was the worst of times because my husband had been gone for a little over a month. Our marriage had been strained for quite a while. He had left abruptly when I was 8 months pregnant, announcing with emphasis, "I don't want to be married anymore." Well, the feeling was mutual, mostly, but I thought his timing stunk. Within 6 months of my son's birth, I would be divorced. My children and I would travel to Atlanta in a borrowed van, moving back in with my parents for a little over a year. You have to admit, it wasn't an ideal situation from anyone's perspective. For now, I had just arrived home from the hospital and my mother had flown down to help for a week. None of us knew what would happen to our little family at that point, but the general trend seemed poor. We were carrying on as normally as possible, despite the impending sense of disaster. My son slept in a small cradle that rocked back and forth beside my bed. I hadn't yet purchased a real crib for him due to the distractions of the previous month. Now didn't appear to be a good time for me to go furniture shopping either. So my mother, practical as always, suggested that she go out and look for something. Off she went with a smile and a wave to search our tiny city for a baby's bed. Meanwhile, the children and I sat together in the tiny house, listening to the window unit air conditioner wheeze out its cooling breath. It's hard to know what to do when life shifts so dramatically on you. So we sat, suspended in time, huddling together for safety. Recently, I saw a show on Animal Planet where a meerkat, a small desert animal that looks like a cross between a squirrel and a groundhog, was bitten by a poisonous viper. The enemy, hidden in a hole in the middle of the meerkat's home territory, had struck the little guy twice in his hind leg. I watched in horror as the tiny victim, whom the documentary makers named Shakespeare, limped away from his clan and went into a kind of stupor. He just shut down, his head drooping over, his tiny arms frozen in a kind of plea. He was temporarily paralyzed with the venom. You could tell he was suffering. His leg was growing increasingly black around the small poison punctures, yet he could not bring himself to move. According to the filmmakers, it was taking all his energy to fight the toxin. Two of his sisters came over and set up a kind of guard around him. The big question, posed by the program's narrator, was whether the poison would kill him or if he would starve first. My tiny family and I felt like that, frozen in a state of suspended pain, unable to respond or even find the nourishment to help us survive the ordeal. My mother's care and the love of friends set up a watch around us, creating a momentary shield against my lingering desert dangers. Like the helping sister meerkats, they could not heal our wounds, but they could make sure that we had the best possible chance to recover. So, Waiting quietly for my mother's return, I held my son in my arms. I moved slightly against the back of the old couch in a vague rocking motion, cooing reassurances to him, with my daughter napping innocently beside us. Mom returned in a short time with a beautiful white crib. Uncharacteristically, she had stopped at a garage sale, finding a baby bed that looked new despite having sheltered other people's children in it first. She purchased it for my son. I was relieved, grateful that my little boy had a comfortable and safe place to sleep now. As we were setting up the cribs, screwing together the pieces, and putting fresh sheets on the used mattress, I noticed something unusual about the bed. On the post at the head of the crib were three scriptures. Someone had handwritten them on stickers you might use to label your business files and posted them on the bed. I can still see two of them as clearly as if I were reading them right off the side of the bed today. The first declared, "I will never leave you or forsake you." The second read, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." I don't remember the third scripture, but I have a vague memory that it was along the same lines as the first two. How strange that my mother had come home with a bed declaring the promises of God to a family unbalanced by broken promises and missing partners. I can't say I've ever had scripture delivered via furniture again. The days passed and my mother returned to Atlanta. The members of the small church I attended took over the role of the sister meerkats, watching us closely, but I could still feel the effects of the poison of my husband's abandonment in my system. I focused on survival, wondering each day what the next would bring. My husband intermittently provided us with support, but we were mostly kept afloat by anonymous gifts sent in the mail or deposited on our doorstep. One day a money order arrived that was signed "From Jesus." The next day there were groceries left mysteriously on our doorstep. Friends would come by and mow the lawn or let us borrow a car to go to the store. We were living on the edge, but it was clear that we were not alone. Nevertheless, even with the help of friends, I was bordering on exhaustion. The crib stayed in the corner of my room, sheltering my young son while my daughter slept fitfully in the room across the hall. One night, as is often the case with small babies, my son began to cry. Like mothers have done for thousands of years, I reached out to soothe him. I fed him, walked him, rocked him, and held him close, whispering secret mother sounds against his cheek in the darkness. All my efforts were without results. It was nearing the middle of the night, and I could feel the weight of the next morning creeping close, demanding a new day's energy when the old day's energy had already borrowed from weeks ahead. Somewhere around 1:30 in the morning, my unhappy baby finally fell asleep. The night shut down, and so did I. Within seconds, I was in my bed, oblivious to the world. Just as my tired body was finding rest, I was rudely awakened. Only a half an hour had passed since my son and I had fallen asleep, and now, without warning, his baby's voice interrupted the night once again. He demanded attention and cure for his troubles. Sitting up slowly, I made my way to the crib. Suddenly, without warning, despair fell over me, a heavy coat wet and weighted down with the tears of unanswerable cries. As I stood next to the crib, looking down on my child, the moon's light slid quietly through the window. Waiting for the strength to reach in and pick my baby up again, I noticed a beam of light settling on the corner of his crib. It fell directly onto one of the scripture stickers. "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me," I read in the dark night. I had often thought that particular scripture simply meant I had to put up with whatever came my way. It seemed to demand my performance rather than reassure me in my need. That perception disappeared completely when suddenly my heart responded to the real meaning of the words. Like electricity to my heart, the scripture generated an energy that seemed to turn the light back on inside me. At that moment, I felt strength return, and I came fully awake, refreshed by the power of His Spirit. The hopelessness of my situation fell away in an instant, and I realized, as I had never understood before, that through Christ I could do all things. Not even my current situation was too desperate a place for God to find me. Then, I did what had seemed impossible only a few minutes before. I woke up, comforted my baby, and found myself freed from the poison of hopelessness, strong enough to rejoin my clan and my life. How did it happen? I only know that my experience that night launched me into the next day, which became the next week, and eventually the next few years. That one moment propelled me to take my first purposeful steps toward building a new life for my small family and for myself. There were years of challenge and adventure that followed, but that is another tale altogether. After all, every story is only one illuminated moment in a lifetime full of stories. I've thought about that night many times over the years. I've thought about the first promise of God on a used crib, declaring that He would never leave us. I've thought about the second scripture claiming I could do all things, and the moment I experienced the power of that guarantee. I've thought about the day my mother came home with a baby bed that read to me in the dark of the night. And I've thought about the unlikely presence of God written on the edge of a used crib, and I know that He can find us anywhere. By the way, Shakespeare the meerkat survived with the help of his family and went on to be a fearless warrior and defender of the clan.